And welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe so you won't miss a new episode. I'm your host, Fritz Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted to have a conversation with Andrew Funk. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Andrew. I assume we're calling you from your home.
Yes.
Now, significant, as we're going to talk about home and homelessness, you are a social impact activist for homeless people, the founding president of Homeless Entrepreneur, and you adopted Barcelona as your city. You've been working and living there for quite a number of years, but have an American background. Again, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot. Really appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully we can create some social impact thanks to this interview.
Yes. Hey, Andrew, in preparing this presentation, I watched online your TEDx presentation you gave at TEDx Gracia. Yeah. And that immediately struck me because we're going to talk about homelessness because you've experienced being homeless yourself. You've been homeless for a year and a half.
Yeah.
If I look at the background, if you look at your resume, if people looked it up, actually you have quite a strong CV, bio. Still, yeah. How did you end up being homeless?
Well, I mean, the simple answer is people become homeless when they don't have enough money to pay rent. Right. That's a simple answer. The more complex answer is I was at a moment in which we raised 300,000 euros for a new company to bridge entrepreneurs and investors. And the partners spent all the money on salaries in 6 months, of which I saw 1,200. So it went from like the best moment to like the worst moment, if you will. Yeah. My son had been born, like I said, and I was excited about getting the company up. Then when you don't have any funds, you can't do anything. That causes stress at home as well. I ended up in a homeless situation because I didn't have a place to stay. And I could have gone back to the States where I had family, but my son was here in Barcelona. So if I have to choose, I'm going to choose an unstable roof to be close to my son than to have a stable house in another country. So you have to make decisions. Mine was clear. You know, I wanted to be close to my son and I needed to figure out how to get back on my feet. When you hit rock bottom, you have, you know, they say the last two things you lose on the street, hope and your cell phone. And the reason why your cell phone is because all your contacts and your connection to the world, right? So I had 35,000 contacts on social media. I had an entrepreneurial spirit and the desire to change my life. And so I figured, well, how can I do that? Thanks to my fiance that I'm with right now, she opened up the door for me to get out of my state of homelessness. But in the process, I was actually, you know, figuring out how I could do that by helping myself and then helping others. Because when you lose almost everything, you can focus really on what you love and no one can hold anything over your head because they literally have nothing to take. Right. So I focused on creating a homeless entrepreneur.
Yeah.
First, it was a movement. Obviously, the energy that I had was younger, more feisty, a bit angrier at the moment, and, you know, frustrated with myself and understanding, you know, I did have this background. I have done a lot. And how did I end up in this situation? How do I get out of it? Right. It wasn't because of drugs. It wasn't because of mental health. It was because a financial situation that caused family issues as well. And I had to figure out how to improve my life, you know, and so I focused on building something that could help myself and others. And we've expanded since, you know, first we had to create association because when you receive money, you have to do that legally. And then afterwards to create more credibility and also to give fiscal write-offs to organizations, we created the foundation last year. And that was a big step too, because, you know, we had to raise 30,000 euros without any expectation of return on investment, right? So it was just this huge process of, you know, how do I develop? How do I get out of that kind of situation? But homelessness, to keep in mind too, I am in a home. But just because you have a roof over your head doesn't mean that you're not homeless. Women that are experiencing domestic violence are still considered homeless. People that lived in overcrowded houses as well, maybe they're like 20 or 30 people living in a small home, they're still considered homeless. And I even have a good friend. I won't mention her name, but she was living in a mansion. She was going through a divorce and she was sleeping in her car in front. And she's like, Andrew, I never understood homelessness until I was going through my divorce and I was sleeping in my car in front of my mansion. And it has nothing to do with the physical space exactly. It's for us, you know, that's what gives me chills, right? It's when the place that you're living takes more away from your life than the value it adds. And I think that's the best definition of homelessness I can give. It's wherever you're at is when the value is, it takes more away from you than it actually gives to you.
Okay, and to turn that around, so can you then also define a home as any place that doesn't have to be a physical roof, which gives you more?
Well, you know the expression, the old one, home is where your heart is, right? Yeah. So when your heart's healthy and happy, it's wherever you're at. You know, the expression to feel at home is quite important, right? So if I was to visit you in the Netherlands and we were friends, and we knew each other, it would be like being at home. So I would have the sensation of love and respect and security, right? And unfortunately, you have more than 1 billion people that are homeless around the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, in preparing this interview, you also mentioned you have about 30,000 contacts in your iPhone.
When I entered in my homeless situation, I had 35,000 contacts on social media.
Okay.
Now it's above 100,000. Yeah. But that social network is extremely important, right? Because I didn't have money, but I had credibility. It was hard for me to tell my story, right? Like, how do you tell your friends that you're in a homeless situation? How do you tell your clients that you're in a homeless situation? So I had like a black blazer that was just like the colors were changing because of the sun. Right. Like, because I was walking everywhere. I couldn't pay for public transportation. And so, you know, I hurt my knee at the same time as well, because there was just so much wear and tear of that. And it's hard when you're in that situation because you don't want to tell your story, but that story empowers you. But you need time to be able to embrace and understand really what's going on. The first time I told my story was on the back page of Guardia, which is a major newspaper in Catalonia. And that was me like getting undressed, if you will, in front of the world and saying, hey, this is my situation. But it's hard because I was making money. I was working probably 14, 15 hours a day, but I couldn't bring in enough income to pay all the bills that I had to pay. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's, if you can't pay to keep it, what do you do? And that's very frustrating. Very frustrating, especially when you have a small child.
Okay, yeah, it raises a couple of questions. I want to first ask the first question, which came out of mind, where if you have such a social network, to what extent were you able to couch surf when you realized I can't afford a home myself? Is that would people offer that or?
Well, what happens is you slowly burn your network.
Yeah.
Without wanting to.
Yeah.
I remember the first night I called someone that I kind of knew.
Yeah.
And asked if I could stay on his couch. And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
But for how long? Right?
Yeah.
And eventually you have to leave. And then you have to find another place. And there's this uncertainty if people will open their doors, they can or can't, and how long you can stay. And I was going from one place to the next, and it's frustrating because I would wake up at like 6 o'clock in the morning and get back around midnight. And the idea was not to bother anyone. So you get up and leave before anyone's awake and you come back when everyone's sleeping. But even then your absence is felt.
Yeah. I understand that. But what I also find interesting, because in one of your talks, you talk about society being blind for homeless people. Like being invisible, but what you're also stating is you are hiding the fact that you're homeless, and you're almost making yourself as small and as invisible as possible by staying out till 12, leaving for six before six.
Exactly. I mean, that was at the beginning, like the first stages of homelessness that I was experiencing. So I think when many people are in that situation, they don't they don't know how to make the right decision, and they need more time as well. So it's easy for me to say that now, right? But in that moment, I was afraid of telling my story. I was afraid of being rejected, and I didn't realize that that's what I needed to do. You know, I needed to tell my story. I needed to get it out there. And they talk about homeless people being invisible, which is absurd because they're the most visible people. They're in the same place many times at the same time. Constantly, you see them, but you don't really see them, which is why I say society is blind. Yeah. That's, I think it's something that you have to experience. You have to mature. Now I understand that, and we deal with a lot of people through our helpline and our Voices program, telling the importance of empowering themselves by sharing their story, but not focused on pity, but focused on the desire to improve your life. And when you do that, your network will open up to you, and normally it's the last person you ever expected.
Okay. So having that experience yourself, at a certain point you start to think about, okay, what am I going to do with my life? How am I going to get out of this? Yeah. You start to think about homeless entrepreneur. Did that, was that an idea? First of all, please describe me what it is, but was it something which came overnight, or was it something you gradually grew on? You, oh, I need to do this.
Well, I mean, for me, as I was entering homelessness, I was trying to figure out how to get out, right? Like, and as I was doing that, I mean, I remember spending 24 hours in the street without any money before I was, you know, officially homeless, to understand what was going on. And I was sleeping in front of Barcelona Sants, which is the main train station in Barcelona. And it was terrible. Like, I woke up hyperventilating at like 2:30 in the morning. Because the lack of security, like people from 50 meters away sounded like they were 5 meters away from you, because of the acoustics and the sensation that anyone could rob you, beat you up, do anything, and you could do nothing about it. That lack of security is terrible. And then like not having money, like how do you ask for money from a stranger? And we recorded that 24 hours, and it was just, you know, I just wanted to eat because I was hungry. So, you know, can I have a little bit of money? I don't know. It's humiliating. I mean, that's asking, like not being able to recognize the value you can give another individual for that exchange. And then, you know, it's just to eat. And then also like the excitement when you have enough that you can eat at McDonald's, right? And go in, which is like $2.90, and you're going in with like small change to do it. And then you're thinking, oh, and then my next meal?
Yeah.
Right? So your face, like poverty for me is like when everything gets spent and burnt really quickly, right? The wealthier you are, the longer you can stretch it out. So that stress of having to come up with the solution constantly and that uncertainty really gets at you. And so homeless entrepreneur was an obvious answer for myself. Mm-hmm. I was an entrepreneur and I was homeless. And I was the only person that was going to change my situation. So I had to look inside myself, understand what I could do, how I could add value, and how I could get out of my situation. Once I did that, how I could help other people. And that went from helping an individual. Marcus, I actually have something I can show here. He was a poet. And he published a book called Homeless Poetry. And what we did was for him to pay for his coffee. So I'm like, I'm not going to invest in your coffee every single day. So he had to write a poem to pay for his coffee. So one poem, one coffee. And that's why the pen is here. The pen is here to help stir, if you will, the coffee that he had. And he was the first person we worked with. He was probably the most complicated person that we had to work with for many reasons. And I found out a month ago that he passed away at 49, I believe, because of health issues and things like that. But that was the beginning. You know, how do you help another individual that was also not accepted by society? And we've gone from helping an individual in Barcelona to another city in Spain, to another country, to another continent. And it's just really trying to understand what homelessness is, what it means to different individuals, and what opportunities can exist as well.
Okay, so a homelessness entrepreneur is helping others.
Empowering others.
Okay. Empowering others and just being an entrepreneur in the irrespective of what their business is.
Yeah, you have entrepreneurial, it's more the entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Because as we both know, there's a very small percent of society that are really entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But the entrepreneurial spirit, because you have to start up, you have to start your life up from nothing. So everybody that's homeless has to have an entrepreneurial mindset to get back on their feet. So you can be an entrepreneur, you can be an intrapreneur, you can do so many different things, but it's the entrepreneurial spirit to take control of your life and start it up again.
So does that translate into just coaching people, being a sounding board, showing them the right direction? What?
The way that it works is we have various programs, 3/4 programs. The first one's a helpline. So as you have a map of the world behind you, we have people calling us from all over the world to find local resources. Thanks to technology now, Connects Hub, we're able to have a landline in up to 10,000 cities. So that means we don't have to buy a new smartphone, we don't have to buy a new SIM card, and we don't have all these extra operative costs. And also there's more trust because people can call a local phone number and speak with us, which is quite nice. So that helpline helps us learn about the people, collect data to understand the situation, and then connect them to local resources. Then we have a voices program. It used to be called Homeless Voices, but a lot of people don't want to recognize they're homeless. So that kind of turned them away. So we just call it voices now. And I'll give you a good example. I was doing a workshop with Ukrainian refugees in Davos. And I asked them a question. I said, well, when you think of homelessness, what do you think about? They're like, dirty, poor, and trash. And then I said, are you aware that you're homeless? And that was just like, their brain went all over the place there. Because a lot of people just don't accept they're in a situation like that. So we got rid of that name, but it's still the same program, Voices. So it gives people 40 seconds to tell their first name, their current city, their situation, and what they're looking for. Then we have the HELP program, which is a holistic program from 3 to 12 months that helps them become active working citizens. So anywhere from professional development, health, housing, education, finance, legal, sales, communication, and a mentor. And our main sponsor is right now, our biggest sponsor is IBM.
Okay.
So they're leading what we're doing as well. So that's how we help people. It was empowering people out of poverty. That was the latest slogan we had. The first one was talent can change your life. Then it was homelessness exists, opportunities too. And then that went into empowering people out of poverty. But then we're like, it's not just about empowering people out of poverty, because we want to empower you as the person interviewing us. We want to empower the volunteer. We want to empower the listener. So it's empowering people, because that bidirectional communication and action and exchange of value is, I think, where we add differential value as an organization, because many times it's one directional. And we want to make sure that it's bidirectional, so that way the person that provides support receives more perceived value than what they put in.
Got it. Why, so far in this discussion, and also in my preparation, I haven't seen any role for governments.
Governments.
Yes.
Okay.
I was wondering, what's your take on governments protecting their own society, their own people?
Well, the first thing is we have to understand their role and their current action plan, if you will.
Yeah. Okay.
If the governments provided all the solutions, then I would not have been homeless, probably.
Yeah.
So the organization existed and was created because the solution did not exist. So the government was not providing the solution that we were creating. We have to keep in mind too that NGOs tend to be the volunteer arm of the governments doing work that they can't or don't want to do. And it's a way of reducing costs as well for taxpayers. But we've been allies of the High Commissioner's Office of Entrepreneurship for Spain. We've worked with city halls in Spain. We've spoken with country leaders. I had a very brief conversation with Antonio Guterres from the United Nations in Davos when I was there, and many other people. And government obviously plays a role, and PPPs, public-private partnerships, is key to what we do. But the reality is it takes much longer to deal with government, right? It takes much, much longer. And they're mainly focused on assistance. So the role that we have is how do we inspire governments to change the percent of the focus of assistance and empowerment? And how do we rework that? And in order to do that, for example, I'm flying to Brussels next week to have conversations with people that are members of parliament, ambassadors, and politicians and businessmen, because we're trying to inspire them through an EU report we've created. Okay. So it's the governments play a key role, but they need to rework their focus, in my opinion, to empower people out of poverty instead of creating like the universal basic income, which is paying someone something for nothing, and you get what you put in. So I think there are many different stakeholders and interests that are kept in mind, which makes it challenging sometimes for governments.
But what I also hear you saying is you provide, I would say, subject matter expertise. You are an expert, and therefore, when you talk about this, it's authentic. It is something. So I also see that. I mean, governments generally do not, maybe unfortunately, hire homeless people. Look, hey, if we're going to do something about this, we need to understand what we're talking about. I mean, we're very good as a society to talk about people, but not with people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think the way that you have to understand that most support for homeless people has been through religious organizations until the 70s. And then that worked into NGOs, but still with a strong influence of religious organizations. So inspiring the government to deal with homeless people is challenging when they represent such a small part of their voting base, right? So that's when you have to expand the terminology and let them understand what homelessness means, right? Because if you talk about 40,000 people in Spain, when they're, let's just say 40 million, more or less, it's not a big problem for them. And on top of it, if they don't vote, it's not, you know, they're not constituents for them. So that means you have to get that group to have a voice and to vote. And then you have to find other groups that are interest groups that bring them into the conversation. I spoke at the Senate of Spain, and I went with two homeless entrepreneurs, one who was in a wheelchair that was homeless for 21 years in Madrid. And then he was, thanks to IBM support with IBM Skills Build, he was getting right training to professionalize his web page development and business. And then another person that was going to be receiving basic universal income from Spain. And so I had two people by my side, but I brought them with me. And I wanted them to have a voice. And it's important for us, instead of just putting a blanket with the logo of an organization and watch how the blanket grows, we need to give that pin, you know, like the SDG pin you have, and see the face and the individuals and watch them grow as well. So I think the biggest challenge there is two things. One is the design. The current design needs to be improved. And also the investment of how and where the money is going. Because a lot of the NGOs base their decisions on where the money is going. And being a small organization, we had the luxury when we had less money as we grow of doing what we wanted to do. So like the EU report, we didn't look for an EU fund that was going to sponsor something and let's create the report. I looked at Europe, traveling around a lot, and I figured there's a problem between the balance of assistance and empowerment. So we need to create a report. So I'm not looking for like what the money's telling me to do. I'm thinking about where I think the money should go. And then right now we have 18 interns from around the world working on that report. We have, there's very likely there's a woman from the European Investment Bank that will be supporting us as an advisor. And we're growing, but it's solving a problem that we perceive, not a problem that the government tells us we need to work on because the money's going there. So I think where the investment is going is important. And also the current design needs to be changed for sure.
Okay, got that. It triggers me another thought hearing you speak. How do you find success? When are you satisfied with the work you're doing?
Well, for me, every step forward is a successful moment, right? And obviously people go up and down, right? And, you know, life is very long, right? So, you know, that would be like, imagine if they, I'm going to say this before I answer directly. How many universities talk about the success rate of their graduates and how many are unemployed? None. For us, success is when the person doesn't need the organization anymore. It's when they participate actively because they want to. But most importantly, they're active working citizens, which is they're doing their life and they include us in it, not because they need it, but because they want it. So there are so many ups and downs in everybody's life, homeless or not homeless, that a success story is an inspirational success story that can be copied and used as a model to inspire other organizations and other people. I can get out like that. That's a success story. And to improve someone's life significantly, like you'll see on the webpage with 429 lives, it's someone that was able to advance in a way that could be seen as an asset. So maybe they learn something new, maybe they receive something valuable that can help them grow, but a sustainable growth, not giving someone a sandwich, right? So when they've grown in a way that empowers them to be independent, we consider that successful progress. And when they've done something that can inspire those after them, we consider that a success story.
Okay, small steps at the same time, but also making, I mean, you're making people aware of to also appreciate the smaller things. It's not just about the big things in life.
Gratitude. We were speaking with the university about doing it. They said they're interested in doing it. And basically it's studying the elasticity of gratitude and the relationship between poverty and wealth. So the more gratitude you have, the longer you can stretch friendship, money, and anything that you have. But when you don't have a relationship based on gratitude, it breaks. And when it breaks, you enter poverty or a poor mindset.
Okay. Hey, do you have a North Star, something which guides you, which inspires you?
There are different answers to that one. You know, I think if you ask me tomorrow, I'll probably respond differently in the next day because, you know, for me, it's a lifestyle. And when I was in college, I always said I wanted to write a great book because I studied literature and economics, either write a great book or have a great life that someone could write a great book about. At the end of the day, my father told me, if you don't add value to society, don't expect anything from it. You know, I had another driving factor is I want to see if I can live in a world in which I don't need money because the value I provide to the people around me surpasses what I could pay and it would be more expensive if I had to. But I just think, you know, I would like to leave a small dent in the universe in the sense of how can I do something that adds value and also lead as an example for my children. So that way they can grow and be better than I am.
Okay. Andrew, unfortunately, I mean, this interview, this discussion, it's the time is flying at the moment. I just want to finish with one final question, if I may. What's your advice you would give the young people listening to this audience, or may actually anybody out there? Is there anything, hey, this is something I want to give you.
Wow, that's a very intense question. I would tell people that they should do at least one inspirational thing each week that they're excited to share with their friends and family. You know, because if you do something inspirational and you're thinking about it, then you're going to excite other people around you in a positive way. And it could be something as simple as, you know, making someone smile. It could be something as simple as doing what you're supposed to do properly and well. You know, it could be you finished something, it could be you started something. But I think if you think about how you can be more aware of your life and how you can contribute to society, you'll stop complaining and asking what other people can do for you, and you'll start thinking about what you can do for society. And that's much more satisfying, and I think the results will be much better too. So I just want to thank you and remind everyone that the brand is yourself, right? You're your brand, and we have the opportunity to make it better. And thanks for bringing us into the conversation in your community. And if anyone wants to collaborate as a volunteer, a partner, a donor, please reach out to us. And we're only as good as our community. We hope we inspire people to join so we can help more people.
Andrew, we'll make sure that people are able to connect you as easy as possible. I want to thank you again for your time. It's been a humbling and a rewarding experience listening to you talk about your own experience and how you're helping others. So again, thank you so much.
Thanks, Fritz.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast. Platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.